to everyone for coming. So I have to apologize. I'm a little sick today, so if anything is unclear, just stop me, and I'll do my best. And as you probably already know or have inferred, I'm a physicist, so this talk will be in many respects sort of imprecise, not just because of the physics, but also because I'll be talking about a subject in which I feel like there are still more mysteries than answers. And so I'll view my job today as to sort of point out interesting places where I think there should be some further communication between mathematicians and physicists, and where I expect there should be interesting generalizations of the algebraic structures that we already know, and connections to all sorts of other interesting things. So I'll just try to give a very broad overview of some aspects related to BPS algebras, and in particular, things like generalized Katz-Moody algebras, and try to point out at certain places where you can find more precise mathematical references when they exist, or physics references as well. So the title of my talk, I believe, was An Old-Fashioned View of BPS Algebras, which is somewhat in contrast to the subject of this workshop, which is, of course, a very modern and sophisticated view of BPS algebras. So my take might be a little bit pedestrian. But what I'd like to do is review a perspective in particular advocated by Harvey and Moore around 96, which we might view as sort of the genesis of this subject. And I'll mostly refer to their papers and various review articles, but let me just start by giving a little bit of the flavor of what the BPS algebra is from that perspective, sort of where what people have been able to do with it so far, where there's things still to be worked out, and so on and so forth. Okay, so it starts with observations from string theory. And these old-fashioned observations, as I've mentioned, relate to an algebraic structure called a generalized Katz-Moody algebra. I'll define what I need when we get there. Though I won't stress the precise definition too much, largely because I think whatever the most correct notion of a BPS algebra is should go beyond it. So observations from string theory, especially related to GKMs, generalized Katz-Moody algebras, circa 1996. All of these observations look like they should be related, but a priori they aren't. And this is one of the mysteries, one of the outstanding mysteries in the subject, how to relate them, if at all. So first, Harvey and Moore proposed that the space of BPS states is an algebra. And I'll say a little bit more sort of what they meant by that later on. And this algebra is sometimes, and in particular in the context of the perturbative heterotic string, they observed is a GKM or some very slight broadening of the notion. I don't want to say generalized, Katz-Moody. Let me just say generalized, and if you have a question, I can tell you in what sense it goes beyond Borchardt's original definition. But anyway, so the space of BPS states is an algebra, and in special cases, at least a subalgebra of the full algebra is a GKM. Secondly, and I'll focus a lot on this observation and more modern incarnations in this talk, one can count BPS states in certain string theory contexts. These account for the entropy of certain supersymmetric black holes in string theory. I might say a few more words about that, but just for the mathematicians, if you hear something like the Strum and Gervafa counting of black hole entropy, supersymmetric black holes, it's all kind of the same structure. I'm just doing a signed count of special states in my string theory, and these states can be enumerated up to sign, and there's a precise definition. And it turns out to be related to black holes. So one can count BPS states in string compactifications that preserve a lot of supersymmetry. Today I'll focus on the case, I'll mostly focus on models that preserve 16 supercharges and are compactifications to 4D. So I would call this 4D n equals 4, but 16 real supercharges. And the function that counts these BPS states, so the resulting function, is observed to be very closely related to the denominator formula of a GKM. More precisely, it's observed, at least in special cases, to be the square of the denominator of a certain GKM. Is the square of the denominator product of a GKM. Of course, which GKM depends on the precise model. I'll say a little bit more later on. And then the final observation, which I'll say essentially nothing about, but just to indicate that there's kind of a web of relations here that begs to be understood. There are certain terms in the low energy effective action of supersymmetric string theories, often called threshold corrections in quotes. You should think of this as the string theoretic analog, or terms governed by the string theoretic analog of a Seiberg-Witten prepotential. Let's call it curly F. And these threshold corrections are computed in different settings than here, preserving a different amount of supersymmetry, in particular 4D n equals 2. But yet here again, Harbi and Moore observed that these threshold corrections involve automorphic forms, which again are squares of denominators of GKMs. Okay, so how these concepts are related is still not understood. And it's been some time, so I hope we can approach the point where we will understand them, and hopefully input from participants in this workshop will help clarify some of these mysteries. Before I give more precise statements and in particular restrict attention to these kind of BPS counting functions, let me say a word or two about why might a physicist care, and then why might a mathematician care about any of these things. Why might a physicist care? Well, there's an old dream in string theory going back to work of Gross and Mende that massive string states should organize themselves into representation of some kind of spontaneously broken gauge symmetry in string theory. And the hope is that there's some point somewhere in the parameter space of string theory where these massive modes become massless, the broken gauge symmetry becomes an honest gauge symmetry, and we can learn something about the underlying symmetry structure of string theory by reaching this point. And as, again, I'll explain a little bit later on in these special contexts, it seems roughly like GKMs, generalizations thereof, are playing the role of this kind of spontaneously broken gauge symmetry for string theory, and we'd like to know if there could be a point where the full symmetry might be restored. How does the GKM embed into whatever this full, presumably enormous, unbroken symmetry structure is? And how can we use it to sort of organize the symmetry structures of string theory, representations of states, and so on? So in a word, the BPS algebra, following this philosophy, you would hope to be some kind of universal or duality invariant remnant of some much larger gauge algebra in string theory of, I'll just say, large symmetry. And another reason you might care about this is because, as we'll see, BPS states are organizing themselves into certain representations of something, and that something appears to produce, as the BPS counting functions, automorphic forms that are naturally defined on string moduli spaces. Now, Borchardt's told us how to define certain automorphic forms for spaces related to orthogonal groups of indefinite signature, of signature 2n. String theory produces much more general moduli spaces. They should have interesting natural sets of automorphic functions defined over them, governed by BPS states. And so you could hope, by understanding better the algebraic structure of these BPS states, you could learn something more about the geometry of the moduli space for more general Calabi-Yau compactifications and what kind of interesting functions are defined on those kinds of spaces. Again, this is all kind of at the level of dreams, but we expect that these things should be true. Good. And then why might a mathematician care? Well, again, I'll refer to Harvey and Moore, their papers, for the details of the analysis. But as we know, and well, let me start by saying physics words, and then I'll make it a little bit more precise. There are rich mathematical conjectures coming from an assortment of string dualities. And in particular, the starring duality in this talk will be dualities between two kinds of superstring theories. They're called the heterotic string and the type 2 string. If you don't know precisely what that means, it doesn't really matter. You can view it as a black box that produces certain correspondences. So this heterotic type 2 duality. But the BPS states mapped to one another by this duality produce nice equivalences. In particular, on the heterotic side, Harvey and Morse studied their notion of a BPS algebra in the context, on this side, the BPS algebra can be computed actually quite explicitly. In fact, this is essentially one of the only contexts I know in which you can really find the algebraic structure quite explicitly in the full string theory. It arises from operator products of heterotic string vertex operators. So it's something that looks familiar to many people here. And essentially, we know from old work also of Leanne and Zuckerman that one can obtain interesting affine Lie algebras from studying the operator products of vertex operator algebras, and more precisely, their BRST cohomology. So we're studying the cohomology with respect to a certain canonically defined nilpotent operator in string theory. And string theorists call this the space of physical states. And you can define a natural Lie algebraic structure on the space. And Harvey and Morse studied that for a particular heterotic string compactified on a four-dimensional torus. And on the type 2 side, this is dual to a different kind of superstring compactification on K3. On this side, the BPS states are harder to get a handle on explicitly, but the cohomology classes, the BPS states are essentially cohomology classes of certain moduli spaces, some of which I'm sure would benefit from more mathematical input to define them precisely, but you should have something in mind like dbCo in general. The cohomology of certain moduli spaces. Physicists would say these cohomology classes are coming from RAPD brains, and there's some kind of product on them arising from correspondences. And so the simplest example, which can actually be kind of, you know, really concretely understood in this sort of framework, is the observation of Nakajima that you can take a direct sum of cohomology classes of cohomology classes on Simen K3 and find a module for the Heisenberg algebra. And the vertex operators on the heterotic side can also be shown to act on this space of states. So I'll just say, observation of Nakajima's original observation of the action of the Heisenberg algebra can be understood more or less explicitly using Harvey and Moore's notion of BPS algebra. Now, I don't want to say too much about how they define the algebra, first because it's not very precise. Second, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it as I won't be using it in the remainder of the talk. But just to give you a flavor, if you were to try to define the most general kind of algebraic structure or multiplication on the space of BPS states in a theory, what sort of thing might a physicist try to concoct to define this structure? So again, going back to considerations of Harvey and Moore, roughly speaking, we have some subspace of our Hilbert space that I'll call HBPS. The Hilbert space could arise in supersymmetric gauge theories. Today I'll be focusing on supersymmetric string compactifications, but so I'll keep everything as general as possible. It sort of works either way. And we'd like to define, of course, some kind of product structure just on this subspace of states. Now, people often say that BPS states form a subsector of the theory. That's not strictly true. You can collide, you can scatter physically two particles that are BPS off of each other. You'll produce some other kinds of particles, and you may not land directly in the BPS Hilbert space again. So you have to do some kind of trick in order to project back down to the subspace and actually define an honest multiplicative structure on this subspace. And that's essentially what Harvey and Moore proposed to do. Just to be, again, sort of general and give you the basic flavor for things, we'll consider some kind of Hilbert space The Hilbert space will be graded by some lattice gamma. Physicists will call this the charge lattice. For example, if I'm just studying a supersymmetric version of a U1 gauge theory, then the electric and magnetic charges both live in a copy of Z. And this lattice is endowed with some kind of symplectic pairing, which, again, you might see physicists call something like the Dirac pairing. And this is non-zero, essentially, morally speaking, if one of the particles in the sector gamma and the other in gamma prime, one is electric and one is magnetic. And then this inner product on the lattice tells you something very physical. It essentially gives you the units of angular momentum that the particles have. So at the risk of being extremely trivial and boring everyone, you can imagine I have some particle of charge gamma here, gamma prime here. If gamma is purely electric, purely electrically charged, gamma prime is purely magnetically charged, then you can remember from your elementary physics class that there's some angular momentum around the axis connecting them, and the angular momentum up to factors that I hopefully got right, but you know, morally speaking, the angular momentum is just given in terms of the value of this pairing, and there's some unit vector going from gamma to gamma prime. So that's in the simplest case. And then, of course, the BPS states are subsets of states in this theory, also graded by this charge lattice. And they're the states that saturate the Bogomolny bound. So again, speaking very generally, you have some superalgebra with some supercharges. I'll just be schematic, Qi, Qj. When you have extended supersymmetry, the algebra in general admits central charges. And the central charges depend on the context, but in particular, they're non-trivial functions of the charges, of the states, and also whatever moduli you have in your particular context. And then, of course, in the charge sector gamma, the BPS states are the lightest allowable states in the charge sector, consistent with the supersymmetry algebra, meaning that the energy, or maybe I should say, H of psi, its energy is given by the length or whatever suitable norm the central charge vector has, and the BPS states saturate this bound. Okay, so again, the central charge in general, it's some linear function in gamma. It's some function of the moduli that depends very much on the context in which we're working. And you'd like to define some kind of product on the space of BPS states such that you bring in two particles, say psi I in gamma I. You scatter them off of each other. You'll produce some state in the sector gamma 1 plus gamma 2. That's fine. And in general, you need to do something to get this state, this bound state, such that it's such that the energy in the center of mass frame is, again, itself BPS in gamma 1 plus gamma 2. So that's all to say we want to define something very physical that arises from scattering. We'll need to play some kind of tricks, and in particular do judicious Lorentz boosts to actually project the state back into the realm of a BPS state so that it once again saturates this Bogomolny bound. And morally speaking, that means when you compute something like a scattering matrix, there's some distinguished pole that corresponds to the projection of this state onto the BPS sector, and you'd like to take the residue and extract something like the structure constants of the algebra from that process. I won't say anything more about that today, but this is the basic notion of Harvey and Moore, and again, I refer you to their study of perturbative vertex operators in the heterotic string. I would say it's precise in this context only. We can talk about it. Right, so From the duality, you'd like to define some kind of multiplication via correspondences. Here. Reverse logic. Well, I will say that when you have two vertex operators that are mutually local, you can define the operator product in the usual way and extract sort of a naive structure constant that's the residue of the pole of z1 minus z2, the distance between the vertex operators. And in general, for the heterotic string context, the vertex operators are not mutually local, and you'll have to do some kind of Lorentz boosting tricks in order to extract these structure constants. They're able to do it, and it's you may not be happy with it as it currently does, but I would, we can leave it there. This is the state of the art in 96, and I agree that there's things to be understood. Okay, so as I said, in most contexts, it's been challenging to say anything more in particular, but again, you could hope to explain something like the observation about the cohomology of the Hilbert scheme of K3 and the action of the Heisenberg algebra on that. Good, okay. So that, again, was sort of the spiritual notion of BPS algebras that physicists have in mind or something. You should view it as sort of maybe the aspirational notion of BPS algebra. It's something that's defined very physically in terms of scattering, and whatever appropriate mathematical structures we can put on things geometrically, like related to harmonic forms on certain moduli spaces, we'd like to be able to translate it into some kind of picture that has the physical flavor of a scattering process. But now, for the rest of the talk, I'll really switch gears and talk about something more indirect, and in particular, counting certain BPS states and superstring compactifications, and hints of generalized Katz-Moody algebras related to these sorts of computations. Again, with the punchline being the full meaning of the algebraic structure that's hinted at in these counts is still unknown, and we'd like to understand much more. Certainly much more than just the words of, it seems to be some kind of spectrum-generating algebra or spontaneously broken gauge algebra. Although that's, again, the moral intuition there. Any other questions before I move on? Okay. So counting BPS states and GKNs. Good. And again, I'll stick to a very special context. I'll consider the heterotic string on T6 times R4. Remember, critical superstring theory is 10-dimensional. Here I have a suitable product space where I'm compactifying the heterotic string on a 6 torus. This could also be Lorentzian. I won't care too much about that today. And it's dual to another kind of superstring called the type 2a string, this time on a product of, let's say, some non-singular K3 surface and times a 2 torus, and again times R4. These string compactifications preserve a lot of supersymmetry. As I said, viewing the compactification as a 4-dimensional effective theory in that R4 or R13, it preserves 16 real supercharges, which morally speaking means that we can say a lot. In particular, I'll be able to explicitly count BPS states in these theories. We also know the geometry of the moduli space in this compactification. It takes the form of a product of double coset spaces. Again, I'll be a little bit rough as usual. Essentially, we have a product of the upper half plane. This is parametrized by a physical field that we call the axiodilaton. But this group here, this quotient by a discrete group on the right, is often referred to in the physics literature as the S-duality group. So it acts on the axiodilaton field in a natural way. And that field in particular just parametrizes a copy of the upper half plane. And then we have some double coset space here based on the orthogonal group. of signature 622, quotiented by some maximal compact here. And then on the right, we have this orthogonal group based, or more precisely, I should say, we have the automorphism group of the unique even unimodular lattice of signature 22.6. And this also has a physics name. It's called the T-duality group. And it acts on various other physical fields in the theory, not the axiodilaton, but things that tell you about the metric, the B-field, Wilson lines, other things you might have heard of. But there's some explicit transformation. First of all, there's a specific organization of all of these physical fields into a space like this, and one can act on those fields with automorphisms of this lattice. So these are all physical duality transformations. And in particular, the BPS states, which we wish to count. Well, of course, all states in the theory are graded by some charges. So are the BPS states. And at generic points in this moduli space, one can show that the appropriate gauge group is just 28 copies of U1. And the BPS states themselves can have both electric and magnetic charges in general. So they're what we call dionic particles. And both the electric and magnetic charges can take values in this unique even unimodular lattice. So I'll call it subelectric and submagnetic. It's the same thing. OK. A remark is that I'll always assume that the charge vectors of the BPS states I'm counting are primitive in the lattice, and there should be a very rich story for non-primitive BPS counts, as well as the algebraic interpretation. And I think there's even less that I could say in that case, but it should be a very interesting generalization. Okay, so let me tell you sort of the punch.
Just for the picture, will the BPS invariants be exponents in some product tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll write it down right now. So one can do the count explicitly. And this was first written down in work of Dijkgraaf, Verlinde, and Verlinde. I'll write it in not the nicest way at first, but then I'll make it a little bit nicer. So very roughly, I have some kind of expansion in terms of three variables. I'll explain why three in a moment. With some interesting coefficients, or the degeneracies d, n, m, l. And this has a precise closed form solution. So phi 10, indeed, as Jan was alluding to, it's a Siegel automorphic form. It's called the Agusa cusp form. So it's the unique Siegel cusp form of weight 10. With respect to the group SP4Z. There's some special limit on the product. One has to be careful about it to get the automorphy properties correct. But there's an infinite product here. And it's governed largely by some coefficients, CNML. So first, let me say, why are there three variables? And I should say, that they're all some exponentiated variables in terms of sigma, tau, and z, which are all complex numbers. And in particular, sigma, tau, and z can be arranged into a 2x2 symmetric matrix that in particular parametrizes the Siegel upper half plane, as you would want for a Siegel automorphic form. And there's three of them for a very physical reason. In particular, we're counting some kind of degeneracies of BPS states. So this is some dimension HBPS. More precisely, there is a sign. So as always, there could be cancellations here. So dimension in quotes, HBPS, as a function of the electric and magnetic charges of the corresponding state. But one should rewrite these arguments in terms of natural T-duality invariants with respect to the duality group here. And there's three such invariants when you have when you're considering primitive charge vectors. And they are QE squared, QM squared, and QE dot QM. So you rewrite everything in terms of natural duality invariant combinations, and the inner product is with respect to the natural real form on I-22-6. Okay, so there's some automorphic form. I still need to tell you what the coefficients are, as all the sort of non-trivial data of the function is defined in terms of them. And in particular, they're the coefficients of the K3 elliptic genus. So I'll just write it again very schematically, but the definition can be made extremely precise. And the K3 elliptic genus is itself an interesting automorphic object. It's a Jacobi form of weight 0 and index 1. It's a weak Jacobi form of weight 0 and index 1.
Is it the Borchers product?
Yes. Right. And in general, in the automorphic forms literature, there is a procedure that's either called a Borchers lift or a multiplicative lift that takes as input a suitable Jacobi forms and produces Siegel forms. And I can play with the adjectives in front of Jacobi form, weak, and so on and so forth, and there are generalizations of that story. But this is the simplest such example, essentially. So this is a natural procedure from the point of view of the automorphic forms literature. And there's also, especially as of recently, a nice relation between this object and enumerative geometry. So let me just mention that Oberdieck and Pixton have proved that this 1 over phi 10, the BPS state count in physics, governs the reduced Gromov-Witten theory of the Calabi-Yau threefold that we have in the game here, in particular a product of some non-singular projective K3 and an elliptic curve in all curve classes. K3 times E. Good. So that's now a proven statement, and I'll refer to their paper for the details of the statement and proof. And moreover, well, we have this function here, and it was further observed even in the original paper of DVV, based on work by Gritsenko and Nikulin, that this function phi 10, again, some nice automorphic form, just call this omega from time to time, is the square of the denominator product of a certain generalized Katz-Moody superalgebra.
Like Gromov-Witten invariants, I think one could expect to be associated to these BPS states. But I thought they would be, I forget now, are they D-brains? I think it cycles in K32.
They are.
So like Gromov-Witten invariants?
So in this case, you can, and they did this precisely, you can relate the reduced Gromov-Witten theory to like Pondre-Pondé-Thomas or invariants more naturally associated to sheaves. And, the intuition for that goes through a relation here with topological strings as this arises in the low energy effective vector. Good. Okay, so there's also now some interesting algebraic structure showing up here. I didn't define what a generalized Katz-Moody algebra is for you. But essentially, you should think of it as some very natural weakening of the axioms of an ordinary Katz-Moody algebra. And much of the highest weight theory and other basic properties of affine Katz-Moody algebras go through for the generalized Katz-Moody case. And in particular, a lot of the representation theory, and in particular, the existence of a wild denominator identity works. But there are some correction terms that one can take into account. Borchers wrote them down in his seminal paper where he defines these Borchards or generalized Katz-Moody algebras. And essentially, the key difference between the generalized Katz-Moodys and the Katz-Moodys that you already know is that generalized Katz-Moodys can have imaginary simple roots, meaning roots of 0 or negative 1 norm squared. So good. This is now at the level of an observation. There should be some generalized Katz-Moody algebra with a known Cartan matrix, as written down by Gritsenko and Nikulin. Does it have a physical meaning? Well, that is the question. It's still largely mysterious, but let me tell you some of the recent progress in trying to understand the appearance of this kind of denominator identity.
You can have a square here because the elliptic of Ketting is inefficient.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll say something about generalizations in a minute. Good, so mysterious, but nonetheless, what's some interesting progress in understanding this direction? Well, not directly related to our goal of understanding the GKM, but sort of interesting related work appeared in a paper by DeBulker, Murthy, and Zaghier in 2012, where they outlined the relation of the Siegel automorphic form with various Mach modular forms, and explained how the Mach modular forms can give some insight into the counting of these BPS states as it relates to wall crossing. I'll mention wall crossing a little bit more later. Work by many people since around 2010 have connected these BPS state counts and certain generalizations to various moonshine observations related to the physics of string theory or conformal field theory on a K3 surface. Originally, this is the Mathieu-Moonshine observation, which was made in the context of an expansion in supervirasoro characters of the K3 elliptic genus, whereupon one finds that the coefficients of this elliptic genus that appeared earlier decompose into dimensions of EREPs of Mathieu group M24. That observation is still mysterious. And there have since been generalizations, conjectural generalizations connecting the physics of string theory on K3 also with umbral moonshines and Conway moonshines, which I won't say anything more about today. So I'll just say there's a lot of moonshine, numerous conjectures, and of various types. And finally, there's some important work by Cheng and Verlinde in 08 that I think begins to suggest or explain part of the reason why there's a GKM associated with this BPS counting function, or at least sort of how it begins to emerge in a physical context. And in particular, they explained in this context that the wild group of the GKM physically arises as a group of wall crossing transformations in this BPS state counting function. And now I'll explain a lot more about that in a minute. Physically arises as wall crossing group. which in particular tells you something about the positive real roots of the algebra. So.
But the text is nonlinear. The walls are not kind of not straight.
That's right. So I'll say more about that in a minute, but in particular, you can project the walls onto the Poincaré disk and see how they look purely in this factor in the moduli space. So in general, the central charge function, which governs the BPS mass, it's a function of all of these moduli and this one, but you can, say, pick some generic fixed point in moduli space here and draw the walls on the upper half plane. And in this context, the fundamental Weil chamber is an equilateral triangle, and then there are other tessellations that I can't draw. Indeed. Good, so what do I mean by wall crossing in this context? Well, I've given you one function. I claim that this function is the BPS counting function over all of moduli space. You only need this one function to deduce the degeneracy of BPS states at any point in the moduli space. But one has to be a little bit careful because this statement, in particular, this equality is a very sloppy one because this function has poles. And if I'm doing suitable contour integrals in moduli space to try and extract the degeneracy, I can cross poles and the degeneracy can jump based on whatever residue it picks up. And you see that the poles are governed essentially by the coefficients of the K3 elliptic genus. So physically, what happens is that this function here counts what we call quarter BPS states, which essentially means that their electric and magnetic charge vectors are not parallel in that charge lattice. But as one travels around in moduli space, you can hit certain codimension one loci, where a quarter BPS state can decay into a sum of two half BPS states. Half BPS states, you can show, are governed by the condition that their electric and magnetic charge vectors are parallel to one another. By the way, half BPS states have also been enumerated extremely explicitly. And they're given by another automorphic object, namely the reciprocal of the 24th power of the Dedekind eta function. Good. So one has to figure out the location of the walls and all the possible decay channels for these dions to understand more of the structure of the BPS states, and then define or propose or conjecture a suitable contour prescription that captures the physically allowed decay channels, which you can obtain by an analysis essentially in the low energy effective theory here via a supergravity analysis. I won't go into the details of that. I don't think it would be terribly insightful. But the moral of the story is essentially that one has to define a careful contour prescription such that when the moduli cross one of these walls where the quarter BPS state is expected to decay, then the degeneracy had better jump exactly by the appropriate, what one would expect if two half BPS states disappeared from the spectrum. And there is such a contour prescription. And I can write it down if we need it, but I'm not sure we need it at this point, because now I'd like to talk about generalizations. Questions? It's not that nasty. I mean, essentially, just as with the affine cats moodies, you can essentially characterize them in terms of the Cartan and then define everything in terms of the HEs and Fs subject to relations imposed by the Cartan. And here it's a hyperbolic rank 3 guy that is...
It's algebra, like for standard ATE, there is a construction of basic representations through vertex operators corresponding to the Cartan lattices. Is it something similar?
No. So the ones that appear in the BPS counting story are defined and classified abstractly in terms of their matrices and satisfying the defining properties. If I have time later in the talk, I'll go back to a context where the GKMs are canonically associated with vertex operator algebras. And in particular, we're able to make the story much more precise in generalizations of this kind of string compactification, where rather than having some geometric interpretation here, I now essentially have moonshine modules, various interesting privileged vertex operator algebras, and I can make precise things like the monster Lie algebra and the action on BPS states in that very special context. Here, the BPS states physically, I mean, I didn't tell you how I enumerated them, but there's some horrible combination of various kinds of D-brains and bound states of strings and other things, and I don't have, therefore, a nice sort of explicit vertex operator algebra associated to these. Though, of course, again, one can hope to try and make headway on the heterotic string side, and I think it's fair to say there's only been quite partial progress on that front. Other questions? Okay, so that was one example. Let me say a little more about natural generalizations, because so far I've given you one extremely particular and perhaps to some of you mysterious looking string compactification. I've given you one nice automorphic function and I claim it tells you something about BPS states, and okay, we can understand the structure of wall crossing extremely explicitly and extract the degeneracies, and that's well and good. But if the story doesn't generalize at all, it's not clear how much interest it would be. Although I'm also a moonshine person, so I don't know that I take that philosophy in general. But anyway, let's give some generalizations. So there's another class of string compactifications that are as supersymmetric as this one, preserve 16 real supercharges. And one can, again, explicitly compute, enumerate all of the quarter BPS dions or particles that are electrically and magnetically charged in those theories. These models are called CHL models. And the basic idea is that rather than just considering, and let's stay on the type 2a side, rather than just considering this the product of K3 times E, and more precisely the sigma models with target this geometric space, you can quotient this space. So quotient by, in the simplest case, on the K3 side, you quotient by an order n symplectic automorphism. They've been classified by Mukai. And correspondingly, on the T2 or the elliptic curve, there's also a non-trivial action of order m there that essentially amounts to shifting by an n torsion point of the elliptic curve. So plus a shift of order m. And you can show that this non-trivial orbifold or quotienting procedure preserves all of the supersymmetry of the original model, but it gives you a more general class of things to work with and different BPS states to count. They were originally studied by David Jadkar and Sen, as well as many other papers by Sen and various collaborators. And I'll just note that in 2017, in a paper that I wrote with Volpato and Zimmet, we considered a larger possible class of CHL models, in particular, quotienting by these symplectic automorphisms on the K3 side. Well, they're well understood, not the algebraic structure, but much of the rest of the physics is quite well understood. But one doesn't have to only consider symmetries or quotients with a nice geometric interpretation. We have a full sigma model or a string theory probing this geometry. And in particular, you can imagine quotienting by some symmetry of the underlying K3 sigma model or conformal field theory that is non-geometric, but nonetheless such that the quotient on this full product space is well defined. And these have also been classified, these kinds of symmetries. On the physics side, the classification was done in a paper by Gabriel Hohenegger and Volpato, and they showed that the symmetries end up being certain special subgroups of the Conway zero group, or the automorphism group of the Leech lattice. That's a theorem. And on the math side, Huybrechts has reinterpreted these symmetries in terms of derived autoequivalences of K3. Good. So anyway, there's a much larger class of symmetries and a much larger class of quotients that you can construct. And Persson and Volpato sort of really classified all possible CHL-like models with this full class of symmetries. And then in 2017, what we did is we found all of the counting functions, all of the BPS counting functions for this huge class of models. Roughly speaking, there are 81 such examples, up to some coincidences that aren't that important. I mention this essentially because now we have a much larger playground, a lot more data, to better understand what the possible algebraic structure could be underlying the BPS state counts in this sort of uniform family of examples. And hopefully with sort of this most general set of data, the most general set of functions in hand, one can really try to put the right definition on the kind of algebraic structures that generalize the GKMs here. There are always Siegel automorphic forms with respect to appropriate congruent subgroups. And in, I'll say a bit more about some other GKM observations, at least in the special case where N is a symplectic automorphism in a moment. But again, we'll get product formulas like this. Algebraically, they look very suggestive. They're certainly automorphic. They arise as multiplicative lifts of Jacobi forms, which we had to fix using various tricks from physics and modularity, and even input from wall crossing. That would be the subject of another talk. So let me pause for questions.
The class of models about Jim Bryan and Dober have some discrepancy.
Ah, good, yeah. You've anticipated one of my next comments.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's great. But before I get to that, any other questions? Okay, so great. Now, here, particularly in the case when you have a symplectic automorphism, perhaps more generally, in terms of these derived autoequivalences, you expect that the resulting BPS counting function should also have some nice enumerative interpretation, as was just mentioned. This was explicitly worked out for the symplectic automorphisms of order 2 by Brian Oberdieck, and also with an appendix by Sheldon Katz. So, and they have more general conjectures as well, not just relating to the order 2 case, but in the case of order 2, at least I'm sure that it's a theorem. One can compute primitive DT invariants for these class of quotients. Again, one finds Siegel modular forms governing these curve counts, roughly speaking. And in fact, there are two Siegel modular forms that arise from their analysis, one of which coincides with our paper, as well as it also appeared in an earlier form in papers by Sen and collaborators. And the other one seems to be new. And that's not actually concerning to us. That's exciting for the following reason, which I'll just state briefly to give you a flavor of why such a discrepancy might arise. It's not really a discrepancy. It's just that there's more functions that you would expect. And that's OK, because essentially, the moduli space here differs as I take these quotients. I'll have reduced rank of the gauge group. The dimensionality of this space will decrease. And I'll have to quotient by different appropriate discrete groups that in particular have subgroups that are new S and T dualities. So if I focus on the subgroup of, say, the S dualities, rather than SL2Z, I get smaller groups. In the simplest cases, I get congruent subgroups like gamma 1 of n. We don't know, essentially. Essentially, the statement is that for these quotients, we don't know the full class of duality invariants by which we can define these functions, or in terms of which we can write these functions. So here, in this case, it turns out, and we're a bit lucky, that up to this primitivity condition, once we fix these T duality invariants, then the BPS states that we counted were the only BPS states in the game. There's only one orbit under the duality group. As the S duality group gets smaller, one can have more orbits. I don't think there's a known classification of exactly how many functions you would expect for each of the CHL models. But you expect different Siegel automorphic forms, which probably are, hopefully are different denominators for different generalized Katz-Moody algebras that become manifest in different limits of the moduli space. And you would hope that perhaps all the different Siegel automorphic forms that you find at different cusps in the full moduli space should somehow combine into some really souped up automorphic form that lives over the whole moduli space and whose expansion at the cusps gives you all of these denominators. And again, the algebraic structure here is some kind of broken gauge symmetry. We don't expect it to be invariant over the whole moduli space, but we expect to only get sort of these remnants of what the algebra should be. It just turns out that we're very lucky. In this case, this one function for the special class of BPS states that we computed for some special bound states of D brains and other things ended up being all that we needed for that model. For the other models, there should be more functions. And what the functions that we found were analogs of the sort of counting problem that Dijkgraaf, Verlinde, and Verlinde did. So they capture one such duality orbit. And in particular, arise from bound states of deep brains and other things that I won't tell you about, essentially because we can do the counting explicitly for that orbit. So that was a long-winded way of why this discrepancy, or why this extra function that they've conjectured is actually very cool and indeed should be part of a much larger story than just what I'm telling you about. But that's great, because that's more data to pin down the algebraic structure further. I'm running out of time, so I won't write down the generalizations for the other symplectic automorphisms. They're easy to do. Of course, they depend on which symmetry element G that I quotient by, where G generates a cyclic symmetry of order n. This will change a little bit. There will be some new quantization conditions here that will change a little bit. And in particular, rather than having the elliptic genus of K3, the multiplicative lift is furnished by coefficients of some other Jacobi form that I'll just label by superscript G, and again, it has some different quantization conditions. But roughly speaking, for those of you that know this language, these are the Fourier coefficients of a version of the elliptic genus, where rather than taking the trace in the full K3 Hilbert space, you're taking the trace in a Hilbert space coming from, first of all, you're taking the trace in, say, for M here, in the GM twisted module of the orbifold conformal field theory of K3, GM twisted model. And secondly, you're counting only states that are G to the N eigenstates. So you can get this from physics. I won't go into the details, but we had to work hard in that 2017 paper to fix these Jacobi forms, and we crucially used input from wall crossing to fix concomitantly the Siegel form and the corresponding seed function. So there's a story there. But in any case, that's done, and we have now in our hand many functions. And again, there's some generalizations of GKM. Observations up to subtleties. I should say that the observations related to GKMs are most well understood when N is a symplectic automorphism of order 1, 2, or 3. Things already start to get extremely interesting once you get to 4 and beyond, in particular because in that case, the fundamental Weyl chamber, among other complications, turns out to be bounded by an infinite number of walls, which again, it looks like some interesting generalization that I don't think anyone has fully worked out or classified. And in particular, we don't always have a square, which I think came up earlier. It turns out that the symplectic automorphism of order 7, you do get integers here, but they're not all even integers. So the square doesn't seem to be fundamental to at least the most general story, though perhaps it matters for the low orders. And all of these, if I went into more details, I would explain that all of these BPS algebraic-like structures, or these hints of GKMs, again, look like spectrum-generating algebras. They mix up states with different masses. So they're sort of like the analog of Virasoro algebra in 2D conformal field theory, wherein you have these modes and they're generating the spectrum for you, but only a small subset of the modes actually preserves the vacuum. So it looks like some kind of badly broken infinite dimensional symmetry in string theory. I won't keep you. So again, I'll just say that there's a generalization that I worked out in a few papers by Volpato and Persson, and also some more recent work with Harrison and Volpato, where we consider CHL-like models based now not on K3s and tori, but rather on essentially moonshine modules or non-geometric conformal field theories. And there, we're able to reproduce famous moonshine denominator identities related to BPS counting functions in that context, and we're able to make the meaning of the generalized Katz-Moody algebras there actually precise, and indeed we specify exactly what representation of this GKM the BPS states form. And there we crucially use the fact that the GKM is associated to a vertex operator algebra. In particular, we're in a heterotic string context, and we really know a lot about how to do computations with vertex operators and make everything much more precise. And I'm happy to talk more about that story later if anyone's interested. But in the interest of time, I'll just wrap up.
Are there any questions?
Yeah. At the beginning of the talk, you said that one should consider generalized Katz-Moody's.
Yeah.
Can you be a little bit more specific?
Yeah, I can, and it goes in stages. So first of all, even back to the papers of Harvey and Moore, they noticed that what they found in the perturbative heterotic examples at tree level that they were studying, that they needed first a slight generalization of the notion of Borchardt's Katz-Moody algebra. There, the generalization is just that instead of demanding that the vector spaces were finite dimensional when one grades by Z at each eigenspace, you need to instead replace Z with some more general lattice. And so they're finite dimensional in each eigenspace only with respect to the lattice grading, but would become infinite dimensional if you tried to break that up into a Z grading. So that's the first generalized. The second generalized would start coming in here, where again, we don't have, I mean, this is not a vertex operator computation as it was there. Here, there's just some hints of some structure. So I should start by saying that Gritsenko and Nikulin classified some generalized Katz-Moody algebras, in particular hyperbolic of rank 3, with a Weyl vector norm squared less than 0. The sign is important. Less than 0. More generally, generalized Katz-Moody algebras need not have a Weyl vector. I think in at least some of our examples, we were able to find a denominator-like interpretation if one lacks the assumption that the algebra even needs a Weyl vector in the first place. Other things start happening. Like I said, this infinite dimensionality, infinite number of walls that bound the fundamental Weyl chamber, that's new. There's no classification. We need to weaken some of the definitions somehow in some way to account for that class of examples. So essentially, even if you only cared about symplectic automorphisms here, so there should be some enumerative interpretation, then even for that class of examples, you can start looking at the counting functions of order 4 and above and start noticing that the properties of the algebra that are implied by the denominator formula go beyond what we naively know, and that seems to be deeply tied to the sign and or existence of a Weyl vector for these GKMs. I can't say anything more precise because it's not clear exactly how we need to adjust the definition to account for all of these possibilities, even just, I think, for all of the symplectic automorphisms. Although I should say in the physics literature, some of these higher order examples have been studied by Govindarajan, Gopalakrishna, and others. And there you can start seeing some of these funny observations that one can start to put an algebraic meaning around. So that's generalized. It's clear that there's an interesting structure there. I think physically the suggestion is just that there's something unsatisfying about our current definition of generalized Katz-Moody algebras, or perhaps we should just think of some larger algebraic structure into which these fit as a subclass, and we just don't know what the right one is. In these cases, yes. I think in all cases, yes. And I think the bad behavior is really kicks in at the level of the Weyl vector. I should say for the moonshine examples, there is a Weyl vector and we can determine it explicitly, and therefore proofs are possible in that case even more easily. For the non-symplectic automorphisms, again, I think yes, integer cartons should be deduced from the denominator identities, but I don't have a full list of the subtleties, essentially.
This is the orbiting paper.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think it's theorems. I think those are conjectures. Those are DT invariants, but I don't.
DT invariants for what?
For the CHM. Yeah. For the CHM. But it's not. I don't think those are theorems. I think
they're not even for order 2.
Yeah, I don't think even for any. So they sort of check it in. They have this very nice conjecture, and then they run down certain curve classes where they can check it. But okay. I don't think they even for that. I don't
okay.
At least vectors of length 2 in some lattice.
Yes,
yeah.
Vectors of length 2, yes.
So they correspond to some spherical objects.
Right. And I should also say that I don't think there are any conjectures for the more general class of symmetries. Non-symplectic automorphisms that nonetheless are they're well-defined physical theories, and the symmetries, like I said, have been classified in precise terms by Huybrechts. But if I don't know the interpretation, even geometrically, if there is one, or in terms of the derived category, I don't know what the conjecture is for those orbifolds.
Any further questions?
So let's